What's up, War Stories fans? I want to talk to you about Ocker Leather Duty Gear for a minute. When performance is your number one priority, we all know choosing the right gear for the job is crucial to your mission success. I used Ocker Leather Duty Gear almost exclusively. If they made it, that's what I used. Ocker Leather Duty Gear gives you the confidence to perform at the highest level in the field, day in and day out. With over 40 years of experience crafting high-quality products for the law enforcement community, Ocker Leather specializes in making holsters, belts, and all the other accessories, and they stand the test of time. Let me tell you, I still have all my Ocker Duty gear, and it is well worn in, but still as nice as the day I got it. Major municipal and federal agencies from LAPD and Border Patrol trust Ocker to outfit their officers with duty gear that wears in and not out. And it's made in America since 1981, so that is awesome. Ocker is renowned for being the best name in leather, so visit OckerLeather.com and use the coupon code WARSTORIES for 10% off your order. That's Adam, King, Edward, Robert, Lincoln, Edward, Adam, Tom, Henry, Edward, Robert.com and use coupon code WARSTORIES for 10% off your order.
Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories.
Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
What's happening, man? It's been a heck of a week. You were on the locker room with us. That was fun.
Yeah, that was really cool. And you got to talk about Duck Boy and all that cool stuff. And
we had the worst connection ever. There's so much that hit the cutting room floor because it sounded robotic.
Really?
Yeah, it was terrible. It was amazing. Like, it was literally the worst like internet connection we've ever had doing the locker room podcast or any of these virtual podcasts. So
that's strange. It's weird that it was all across the board too.
Yeah, it was all over the place. So who knows? Maybe there was the UFOs were, you know, interfering or the solar flares. Well, we found out that they're real. Yeah, now that we know they're real. So yeah. Anyway, it's been interesting. It's been good. I had a good time with Juan. His stories about growing up in the hood and then becoming a cop were awesome. We've got some good stuff coming up, so stay with us. Chuck and I are going to be doing a special episode we kind of talked about a little bit on Locker Room, where we have an essay on A Nation of Cowards that was written in 1993 that we'll be reading and discussing. It's a really good essay, especially for something written in 1993. So again, that'll be a premium episode because it will be a little bit different than anything we normally do. We've got some War Stories merch coming your way, and we also, if you want to check it out, go over to our TeePublic site, and we have some Locker Room merch finally dropping that we talked about on our last episode. But on the War Stories podcast, we're always here for stories. That's, you know, what we like to do, and we actually have Mac with us. How are you, Mac?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, I could complain, but nobody would care, right?
That's right.
Mac is coming to us. You are currently in the Army Reserve.
Yep.
Is that correct?
I've been in the Army Reserve my entire military career.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, how you ended up in the Army Reserve, how long you've been there, and we'll go from there.
So like you said, my name is Mac. I was born and raised in Roanoke, Virginia. I live in Bedford, Virginia currently. I've been in the Army Reserves for, I'm just shy of 10 years, just a couple months shy of 10 years. I've been on two tours. My first tour was 2013 to 14 in Afghanistan. My second tour was in Iraq from 2018-2019.
Wow. It's both places that, I mean, they weren't hotbeds of activity in those years, right? But it was still not exactly a cakewalk.
I came in a little bit late on the both wars. Right. But I didn't join TOS 20 because I was a little bit of a hellion growing up. I tried for the Marines first and they didn't like my background. So
really?
Pretty picky.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty picky, especially when you got some bigger charges and the Army is just kind of they let anybody in pretty much.
It's crazy though, you know, like, cause Marines have such a reputation and it's a joke reputation of being the dumbest and, you know, crayon eating, like all that stuff. But people don't realize, like, you know, reputations are usually built on the other branches making fun of you, not actually what you do, because, you know, the Coast Guard breaks into submarines live on camera.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, they make fun of you until it's to your face, and then they're like, unless you're a buddy or something like that. But I'll tell you this, they're so freaking picky. When I got out, I tried going back in, and then I had too many tattoos, which I got all while I was in. I was still on terminal leave and they wouldn't accept me back. Like, go to the Army. I was like, the fuck?
Damn, you'll
I
know.
Have a reenlistment code. They wanted me to reenlist. What are you talking about?
So it's funny, you know, they use that acronym, Armies Ain't Ready for Marines Yet. I was actually joined the Army hoping I could switch over to the Marines and talk to a bunch of buddies that had switched from the Marines to the Army. They said that's a terrible idea. So
there you go.
I decided to stay in the Army.
So you've been in the Army Reserve for 10 years. You've done two deployments overseas that sounded like they were each just about just under a year. Is that about right?
My one in Afghanistan. So with the reserves, you go to MOB first and you spend about 2 months roughly doing some just basic free training. And then you leave. And in 2013, it was funny because we actually shipped out from Camp Shelby, Mississippi on my birthday. And hit Afghanistan a couple of days later. But our second one was actually ended up coming home on a Red Cross message a couple months early. So that one was a little bit shorter for me than anybody else.
So you now both times when you went, was this one of those, like, you've known for a long time, you're going to get called up and this and that and the other thing, and it was just your turn? Or is this something like as a reservist that you said, no, I'll volunteer to go on a deployment? Or how did that work for you?
So my first one was voluntold. My unit got slotted and we all went. So my second one was, they kind of gave us the option, and I was kind of on the fence with it for a while, and then they went ahead and already transferred me to a different unit to get deployed. So that one was voluntold also.
You're like, oh, so, let me think about it. And they're like, we're putting you in this unit, and they're getting deployed. So
yeah.
They're like, let us know if you want to go. Oh, by the way, you're going, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, we were just curious. It wasn't going to affect anything. We don't really care if you want to go, but, you know. It's always funny to laugh at you.
That's right. Make you think mentality. You have the option.
Right, exactly. So now I posted an article. I want to get your take on this before we get into your story or stories. I posted an article that basically addressed hunger among National Guard members and their families. And I know there's obviously a difference between National Guard and Reserve, and there's lots of different tiers. Like, there are people that are in the National Guard that are full-time regular Army employees, and there's all kinds of weird, like, classifications. But as a reservist, you are you in the National Guard or actually just in the Army Reserve?
Just the Army Reserve.
Okay.
Two different things.
No, I know. I'm just meaning in terms of, like, you, the similar parts are as far as service, you know, weekends and you know, the 2 weeks a year, 1 weekend a month and 2 weeks a year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's similar in that respect, but
the major difference in the two is, you know, National Guard, you're locked to, if I was in Virginia National Guard, I would be just in Virginia.
Right.
Now, if I'm in the reserves, I can transfer all across the country.
That's cool.
And then as far as like what the benefits and the pay and stuff like that, is that comparable or is that much different?
Oh, I couldn't even tell you. I would imagine so.
Because what this is talking about, and we were kind of discussing before Chuck jumped in with this, is that according to a poll, and I don't know how accurate it is, but they were saying that because a lot of the National Guard's people have been called up and had to, quote unquote, deploy for COVID vaccination efforts and for civil unrest and for, you know, all these different stupid things that they've had to deploy for, they are seeing like financial issues and hunger issues at home because they're not making as much money doing their regular job. They're making, you know, National Guard deployment money. Mm-hmm. And that these people are actually like going to need financial assistance and like food stamps. And so I wanted to ask you, Mac, if you could see something like that happening, obviously not when you get deployed overseas, but you were telling me something about them with certain deployments, shorting the days just to make sure that you don't.
Yeah. Qualify. So annual training is, you know, it's usually they like to say it's 2 weeks. A lot of times it ends up being 3 weeks. So the shitty part is when you hit 30 days, the Army has to pay you for BAH and BAS, which is like base allowance substance, for any dependents at home. So when you go to AT and you're there for, you know, anywhere from 21 to 27 days, you're getting paid for just that amount of time. You don't get any kickers for housing or substance at home. So they basically shortchange you a lot of money that you could have made for if you were to just stay another few days.
Right. Which, you know, I guess it makes sense on their end. It just sucks on your end because now it sounds like some of these poor National Guardsmen who've had, you know, a 2020 that saw them get deployed more times than some of the Clinton era military guys that were, you know, served their entire life. For some of these issues. But now as a result of that, they're getting paid less because they're not going to their regular jobs. They're getting the National Guard money. And now they're having issues with feeding their families as a result, which is, to me, if that's even a possibility, that's ridiculous and completely unacceptable. Have you run into anything like that with, you know, some of the reservists and stuff that you've seen where their service actually becomes a financial hardship?
Oh, absolutely. We have, in the past, we've had soldiers that have not been able to pay bills, you know, get kicked out of their house, you know, which I think is really shitty because at that point, the Army's just like, hey, figure your shit out. That's your personal life, not our life. That could come down to command, maybe not so much, you know, battalion level or brigade level. You know, that could just be at company level. But,
and I mean, there would be a difference if you were just like working a regular job, not getting deployed all the time, not, you know, making your normal income and then just burning it, blowing it on, you know, pit vipers and tequila shots. But, you know, when you're actually like trying to do the right thing, you know, do your time in the guard, do your time in the reserve, and it becomes a financial hardship for you as a result of that, and they don't give a shit. That's pretty.
Yeah. That's what it seems like. But like I said, that could just come down to leadership at that point, company with leadership.
And we all know that the military doesn't pay great.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's but why they offer perks of living in base housing and stuff.
Right. Like but to then like have issues where because of your military service, you can't even feed your family.
That's some other shit that I've
North had. Korea military shit. That's so, not for here.
Some other shit that I've had happen is they have these government travel cards, and it's a credit card. And so I've got one. It's a credit card in my name through Citibank that the Army makes you get. And then when you go on training or do anything like that, you have to use that card as your, you know, get hotels, you use it for travel expenses and all that stuff. And that's not always guaranteed that that's going to get paid back. And if it doesn't, if the Army doesn't pay really? It comes out of your pocket. And I had to go to some event down in Florida after my first deployment. And it ended up having a negative balance on it of like $800 and some. And my commander at that time said, "Hey, this needs to be paid off by next month." Like, what do you want me to pull $800 and some out of my ass? You know, at that point I was making like $13 an hour, which I thought I was fucking killing it, which, you know, looking back at it, dude, that ain't shit.
No. Especially not to pull $800 out of your ass.
Yeah.
You know, $800, that's an entire paycheck, man. But so, you know, I went back and forth on that. It's one of the reasons that I'm only an E5 and have been in for almost 10 years. I lost my shit with that guy and ended up cussing him in front of XO, the first sergeant, my platoon sergeant, my squad leader, everybody was in there.
Oops. So.
Yeah, but I bet
all your younger guys, they look up to you.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, I had told one of my more recent first sergeant, he's not my first sergeant anymore. I had told him that story because he's asking why I was only an E5. I told him that story and he said, "Well, good for you." He said, "You stood your fucking ground." He said, "That's what you got to do sometimes."
Absolutely. So,
yeah. There's a difference between, you know, gaining the respect of your superiors and gaining the respect of your fellow soldiers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
but,
well, the floor is yours, my friend. You contacted us and want to talk about being in the reserve and you what's your stories?
Yeah. So, I've we'll start with a tough story. I got a couple of funny stories after that. My main thing is, during my first deployment in Afghanistan, it was, like you said, it was a pretty low time in the war. There wasn't a lot going on. You know, there was the mortar attacks that happened on a regular basis. Our first night in Afghanistan, we actually got mortared 6 times. So that was kind of a wake up call. Damn. Welcome to Afghanistan. we had gone on a couple missions at this point. I ended up getting attached to a smaller group. I'm a vertical engineer. So while we were in Afghanistan, we were going around building up smaller bases, defenses, and stuff like that, and trying to close down bigger bases.
The existence of a vertical engineer implies the existence of a horizontal engineer, does it not?
Yep. Yep. So horizontal engineer build roads, uh-huh. And we build bases.
Got it. Okay.
There that's we go. Simplified version of it.
Perfect. I love those answers. They're easy for me to understand, you know, as a cop. So. All right, so you go to your first deployment.
So, you know, we had been on a couple missions at this point. We had seen a couple little things here and there. I was on this little small group, and me and my buddy, we were waiting on, it was 3:00 in the morning. We were waiting on the truck to come pick us up to take us to the motor pool so we could load up for a convoy. While we were sitting there waiting, we were just kind of bullshitting. And all of a sudden there was a gunshot that happened or that went off. And for that to happen on Kandahar, Kandahar Airfield was the main base I was out of. That was kind of, you know, it wasn't normal for a gunshot to be heard on that base because it was so big. We just kind of figured that somebody had a negligent discharge and we were kind of joked back and forth that somebody was about to get their ass chewed for it.
Right.
We had the first sergeant pull up in the truck. We threw our bags in the back. We started heading from the barracks towards the motor pool. And we were passing this row of porta-johns. And as we were passing the row of porta-johns, we noticed that there were these MPs that were opening up all the porta-john doors. And as we were passing by, they come to this one porta-john where it was locked and they were struggling getting it open. They finally pried the door open and there was a female that fell face first into the sand.
Oh.
She had shot herself in the head.
Fuck.
And you know, at the time it was, you know, you don't, at in the moment, you're just like, oh fuck, you know, like that shit just happened. And then would you know, there was,
yeah, there's a weird so moment of what the happened. Fuck am I looking at?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, is that really a fucking first dead body with a gunshot wound in the head? Like, is that, did I just find somebody committed suicide in a fucking Andy Gump?
Yeah. So the, you know, that wasn't my first time seeing somebody that had been shot. But it was the first time I had ever seen, an American. And I don't know who that female was. She wasn't a part of my unit.
Was she in uniform?
I've never found out who she was. Do what?
Was she in uniform or was in her civvies or?
Yeah, she was in her multicams.
Okay.
I don't know, you know what she shot herself with. She had her M4 there, but I mean, it doesn't mean that she used that. She might have had a sidearm too. I don't know.
But that must have been rough.
Yeah, it definitely was, and it. So when that happened, First Sergeant immediately pulled off. I mean, we were, when they opened up Porta John, we were 50 foot from her, maybe at most. But First Sergeant immediately turned away from it, turned the truck away from it, and changed the subject. Didn't say anything else about it. Started kind of trying to joke around. Just like I said, change the subject. He wouldn't make light of the situation. And for me at that time, it was kind of confusing. Like, why would you not address that? That's something.
It's a big elephant that, in the room.
Yeah, yeah. And we never talked about it again. Nobody in the truck ever talked about it again.
Really?
And it kind of seemed like it was like almost a sin to talk about it, I guess.
Like you were deliberately ignoring what you had all just seen. And like, we're just going to pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, we've talked about it before on the show, the glass half full, you know, or the glass that's all the way full or, you know, half full or whatever. Maybe it was, he had seen so much carnage that he was just like, nope, not doing it.
Yeah, he might have just been checked out.
His level was up here, you know, so he's probably just
thought, yeah, that was the
best way to deal with it.
Yeah, right.
I don't know that he really intentionally did that, you know, to be like that. That, you know, he was a first sergeant. That wasn't his first time being over there.
Right.
Yeah, like I said, it just seemed sinful to talk about it. It seemed like nobody, like you shouldn't say anything. And so I just forgot about it. Suppressed it, really. I didn't forget about it. And that stayed pretty closed in for a really long time. So there was a bunch of, you know, there was more stuff that happened throughout the deployment. We didn't end up losing any of our people, thankfully. We came home and the separation from going from doing Army shit 24/7 all day, every day, and then coming home to just being home, that's a huge shock. And you don't think it would be, you know, you're like, hell yeah, I get to go home, get to spend time with my wife, my family, go do whatever the hell I want to do. But that's actually, I feel like that was more stressful than actually being there. And I don't read a lot of books, but one of the books that I read, I actually picked up at a yard sale. It's called Spare Parts by Buzz Williams, and he was a Marine reservist. And the thing that I loved most about that book is he explains it so well, about doing active duty time. So he was in, I believe it was Desert Storm. And he talks about when he came home, just the, you know, the emptiness, you just feel stranded. You know, you're surrounded by all your loved ones, but at the same time, you feel like you're all by yourself.
Yeah,
you don't have your brothers there. Yeah.
I was talking to a doctor about some of that stuff, and he kind of explained that that's similar to how I was feeling. It was just talking about, like, when you get into a critical incident and then you bond with your cop buddies, or you bond with your firefighter buddies, or you bond with anybody over a critical incident where you all almost die, or you all see some crazy stuff, they become closer to you than a lot of other people, even family and friends. And so when you are around your family and friends, you don't have that same closeness that you did with your, you know, brothers in arms. And so it starts to feel like you're not close to them at all, even though you are. You just, you know, craving, or you're missing that level of closeness that you had with your battle buddies. And let's just face it, you're not supposed to have a battle buddy level of closeness with your wife, I don't think. It's too intimate.
It's funny you say that. There's things that I've, me and my buddy have done that my wife thinks we're just fucking weird.
That might just be something too.
Yeah, probably. And me and my wife had been, you know, we were married at that point too. We've been married for 8 years. And she's been with me for both deployments.
So when you came home and you felt alienated and you felt separated from your family, were you able to talk to her about that?
No, I didn't talk to her about a lot that happened at all in Afghanistan.
Your choice or her choice?
I think it was a mutual agreement. At first, you know, I had, you know, like the mortars coming in. To me, I got used to mortars. It was just one of those things. It was an inconvenience more than anything. You know, mortar coming in, you just hit the deck, wait for it to go off, and go about your shit. And I remember we had run into one of my buddies at the store, and I told him about one of the mortars. And she was right there next to me when I was telling him about it. And I could tell that she was, you know, physically upset about it. And so after that, I just never mentioned anything about it to her. But yeah, I mean, that the you know, the you notice there's a difference within days of being home. Like I said, you're home and you should be relieved that you're home, but at the same time, you're just like, this isn't where I want to be. So for us, being in the reserves, we didn't get to, or we didn't have to go to drill for 3 months. It was a big separation period from me and all my battle buddies, especially my close friend. The one that me and him went everywhere together in Afghanistan. When we separated at the airport, you know, we left each other with a handshake. And then when we saw each other for the first time back at drill, that was the biggest hug that I've ever given anybody. But you know, that's my brother. That's my buddy.
Yeah, it's a difference.
Me and him don't live near each other, and we talk more than my buddy that lives 5 minutes up the road.
Is that because you could actually relate with everything that was going on from all the loneliness that you were feeling when you came back? Is that because you could relate to him better? And
yeah, yeah,
he knew exactly what you were feeling. You knew what he was feeling.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it's not something we would talk about either. You know, no. We didn't really talk about that stuff, but being together, it made it all better. I guess that's the best way to put that.
You know, it's funny. I've seen it happen, and it's happened to me, and I've seen it happen with other people where, you know, they call it the knowing look, you know, where you look at somebody and you make eye contact and you both know what the other person is thinking. And oh, then yeah. Occasionally one of you will say, yep, or, you know, a head nod or just a, uh-huh, you know, whatever it is. That's what you're talking about. Like that, you don't have to say it necessarily. You don't have to talk about it necessarily. You just get it. It just is.
Oh yeah. The connection.
Right.
They talk about the brotherhood of being in the military. Doesn't matter what branch. I mean, that's true. There is a brotherhood, sisterhood, you know, whatever you want to call it. But there's just that bond, I guess the unspoken bond, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, it was great being back to drill, and you know, drill only lasts a couple of days, and then you go back to being stranded again, going right. home and not really, I guess, having that person to be with, not having that person to talk to.
That must have been tough.
We kind of shut yeah. down, right?
Yeah, you really do. You just kind of start going into the daily motions. You just go with the flow and just
like autopilot
go through life. Yep. And that's pretty much, I was on autopilot for a while. That's a good description. I like that. But I was on autopilot for a while. And then December 6th, 2014, just a few months after we got home, we had one of our buddies commit suicide.
Now, was he deployed with you?
Yep.
Okay.
He had been to Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. He was a former Marine. His name's Sergeant McFarlane. And he's one of those guys, you know, that gets along with everybody. He's everybody's friend. He's a big teddy bear. And that just kind of hit hard. And that, when all that happened, that brought back everything with that female, seeing her in the sand. Right. And it seemed like I had forgot about it. I had been great at keeping that out of my head all the way until that happened. And it seemed like I couldn't get her out of my head. And it stayed like that for, you know, a long time. I didn't go to the VA for any kind of PTSD or treatments or talk to anybody about it. I just dealt with it. And it's funny, it was about a year ago, a little over a year ago, I found your podcast. And the first episode that I had listened to was when John's friend had came on and talked about witnessing that suicide,
right.
Where the guy burned up in the car. And, you know, that hit home for me. And he was talking about how, you know, he was talking about all of his symptoms, you know, anger, frustration, you know, just losing your shit at stupid stuff.
Right.
And, you know, all of that was hitting the nail right on the head. But he talked about how getting help was something that was like one of the best things he had done. And so I decided I'd start trying to look into ways to fix my issues. So I'm still doing PTSD treatments with the VA, but.
And what do you think? I mean, you're in the middle of it. You're not at the beginning of it. You're not on the end of it. You're not, you know, you're right in the middle of it. What do you think about the whole experience so far as getting treatment?
You know, that's kind of, I can notice a difference for sure.
Mm-hmm. It feels weird, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I don't talk to about my feelings that lot, that much. Especially not to some random stranger that's never probably never shot a gun. Much less.
You feel like a total, I guess the easiest way, you feel like a total chicken shit pussy. You're like, talking about your like, I'm sitting here talking about my feelings like a fucking asshole. And, and then you go home and it helps. And you're like, I don't want to go. I'm going to go talk about my feelings like an asshole. I can't do that. I gotta, oh man, that's not. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't want to miss my appointment.
Yeah, I got my appointment in an hour. I got to make sure I'm there, man. Yeah.
It's a very weird, like every fiber of your being wants to reject it. And yet there's this part of you that's like, no, we're going. It helps. Yeah.
And you're like, God damn it. You know, what's crazy is that I got forced to see a psychologist. I mean, after you get into a critical incident, and I'm sure it's the same for you, Tom.
Yeah.
They force you to go.
Yes.
Like you have to talk to them.
As they should.
And you're like, yeah. And I was like, man, this is so stupid. And I get in there, I'm just sitting in there, you know, and finally, you know, we start talking and it feels so weird and taboo. And you're like, this is fucking stupid. You don't know anything. You sit behind a desk. You haven't done anything. You haven't seen the shit that we've seen. You haven't done half the shit or had it happen to you. Next thing you know, you're timed out on time. And you're like, oh, okay. And then she's like, all right, well, or he or she's like, oh, well, we're going to see you back in another week. And you're like, okay. And then you kind of look forward to it. But at the same time, you're like, this is fucking stupid.
This is stupid. I can't believe I have to do this. When should I be here?
Exactly. And then you run out on time again.
Right.
And you're like, fuck, you know,
so it's funny. I had that exact same thing. And, you know, at the VA, it's all voluntary. You can quit at any time. And I'm a contractor. I own my own business and I got a busy schedule and most of my jobs are 45 minutes from the house, but I live out in the middle of nowhere. That's a normal drive, but it's 45 minutes in the opposite direction of the VA. And the VA is 45 minutes the other direction.
Right. So that's an hour and a half just to go from work to the VA.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could do that.
Yeah. Good job. no, I almost quit. And then my therapist ended up having a family emergency and ended up taking 2 weeks off. And I feel like I needed that 2 weeks because when we come back and did the first session afterwards, I was like y'all were saying, I didn't want to be there, but at the same time, I was like, man, I'm glad I'm doing this.
Now, talk to me a little bit about why you thought about quitting. Cause I know there are times, you know, especially when it's voluntary where you're like, I'm not doing this anymore. And you're ready to just like, this is fucking stupid and quit and whatever. But I'm curious to know specifically, like if you're saying you were thinking about quitting and then your therapist had to take a 2 week break and that 2 week break made you not quit. Talk to me about that. Tell me how kind of that mental process works. Cause that's such an interesting turnaround.
Like I said, I'm a contractor. I have a busy schedule. I'm booked months out right now and I'm just trying to get my stuff, you know, get all my projects done so that way I can get paid and, you know, sit on my ass on the couch in the evenings.
Cause that's the goal. Let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it started, interfering too much with my work. Taking too much time out of the day to do it. And it's stressful. Going through PTSD treatment is very stressful.
By design.
And, you know, you're talking about these things that you don't want to talk to anybody about. You don't want to even think about. For my particular therapy, I'm doing written exposure. So I'm writing these things down that I've never put pen to paper. I've never talked to anybody, and they say more detail every single week. We need more detail. We want more detail. And so you're having to like dig deep and to think about these things that, like I said, you've, or for me personally, I've suppressed for 7 years, 8 years. Just, it's tough.
Yeah. I don't know if I don't know if the writing one would have been as effective for me.
Yeah. I'm right here.
I think I would have just been so frustrated with it that I would have quit. So I get it. I totally get, like, you're just like, man, I don't want to write. I don't want to go into more detail. This is stupid. I didn't want to be here in the first place, and I'm quitting.
Yeah.
And then two weeks go by, and you're like, all right, I did feel a little better when I was going.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did at least give me an option, too, of what kind of therapy I wanted. They just kind of laid them all out there and said, this one's best for these, this one's best for those, and blah, 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 this and that. And the written exposure seemed like it would be okay for me. The thing that kind of sold me on it was a lot shorter, than the rest of them. And really? Like I said, the busy schedule
plan was shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, my busy schedule, I was like, fuck yeah, I'll take the short one. See if I can get this out. But, I really have noticed a difference. During those 2 weeks, I'm off actually. So I have two therapists. I have the PTSD therapist, and then I have just my regular therapist that I go and talk to at the VA. He called me during that 2 weeks and just pretty much checked in. And at this point, I hadn't talked to him in 3 or 4 months because I had been talking to the other people, and he said he just steps away during that time. But it was another one of those, like, damn it, this dude's calling me. And you answer the phone, we ended up being on the phone for an hour, and afterwards I just felt so much better. Just talking to him about, you know, how the treatment was going and differences I've noticed and things like that.
It's also nice to have somebody reassure you that you're not going crazy and that these things are all explainable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one reason that I kept listening to podcasts. I'm not a big podcast person. I listen to music more so than anything. And it was just randomly one day I was in the car on a trip and I didn't want to listen to the same, you know, 50 songs again. So I turned something else on that I wanted to hear something military, and War Stories was one of the first ones that popped up.
Awesome.
And your intro, when the intro came on, I was like, damn, this shit sounds badass. but yeah,
we've had some pretty crazy stories on this show over the years. It's been, it's been a fun ride.
I've listened to, every chance I got, I was listening to War Stories after that first episode. And like you said, hearing other people have the same issues that I was going through, that shit spoke, you know, thanks so much to me.
Yeah, I joke on this show many, many times that I think group therapy is stupid, and I also am fully aware that this podcast is a form of group therapy. So, what are you going to do, right? I mean, we all have our preconceived notions about things, and we tell ourselves little lies all the time to make things we do okay, you know?
That's right. Absolutely. Another little fold in my story here. Another little page in my book. So after Sergeant Mac had killed himself, I kind of fell into a little bit of a little lull, depression. I guess. Yeah.
It's even that you don't even want to say the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though that's exactly what it is. You fell into a little bit of a depression, but we don't even want to say that because we're like, I'm fucking depressed. You're depressed.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, you know, fell into the darkness is what I like to call it.
Right.
And I just started drinking way more than anybody really should. And it got to the point where it was all day, every day type deal. When you start doing that, kind of strains marriage, strains personal life, strains work life, strains everything. And then I started having those thoughts, you know, maybe I should just, I'm just going to kill myself.
Better if I wasn't here.
Yeah. Shit like that. And it got to the point where, you know, I had actually had my gun to my head and that stuff on more than one occasion. And they tell you to reach out when you're thinking about somebody, reach out and talk to a battle buddy, right? That shit is proof. Proof that shit works. There was on more than one occasion where I was sitting there just contemplating life, thinking about things, and my phone would ring. Either be my buddy Jesse, or you know, just any other battle buddy. Somebody would call. It seemed like, and to me, I grew up religious, in a religious household. To me, that was God telling me that there was other things in this life for me to do.
Right, he's got your back.
Yeah, that's right.
If somebody calls you on more than one occasion and it's different people and they just randomly call you at moments like that in your life.
Just the bullshit.
Just to and it's not like, you know, your mom or, you know, your auntie or your cousin. It's like a battle buddy calling you at the lowest possible moment for you. And they'd have no idea. They're just reaching out and checking on you. So I say, man, if you get the urge to call your buddy, call him. Do it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You never know what that ringing phone interrupts.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, that, like I said, I felt like there was something more for me in life. So I made a change. On my own, I quit drinking. Just kind of started weaning off here and there. And my last time I drank was October 27th, 2015.
Congrats. Wow, that's really good.
Congratulations.
I was at drill, and I was always the wild. I was a party animal. I was the one that would like to stir shit when I get drunk, and I got us in trouble a lot. But that drunk story of the naked guy in the hotel, that's me.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, but
yep, that's me. But no, I was at drill, and I told my buddies, I was like, hey, this is the last time I'm drinking. And all of them, nobody believed me.
Of course.
I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I quit drinking by myself and got myself out of that rut. And since then, me and my wife have had a kid, and it's the greatest blessing in the world. He's 3 years old, and he's the biggest little turd in the world. we call him LT. It stands for little turd. He's you know, him and my wife are the reasons that I do what I do every day now.
Yeah.
That's
something
good.
Something bigger than yourself, something outside of yourself, as we always talk about.
That's right. But yeah, so that's, you know, that brings us to today. I'm, like I said, still in the middle of treatment, but on my way, still on the path.
And that's the thing. It's you may get to a point where you're like, I'll go if I feel like it. And then you may never feel like it again. It's like drinking. You were like, that, I think I'll just stop. And you were fine.
Yeah.
You know, that there may come a point where you're on the other side of things. And you're just going for tune-ups every once in a while. Just, you know, check under the hood, see if I got enough oil, get the tires, and send me down the road.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I figured I'd tell a couple funny stories, you know.
Sure.
kind of come up out of the dark there. So like I said, my buddy Jesse, he's my best friend. He lives about 2 hours away, and I talk to him probably 4 or 5 times a week on the phone. But me and him, we first met each other. I mean, I have a country accent, and first time I met this guy, I was like, huh?
We couldn't tell.
Yeah. First time I met this guy, I was like, this motherfucker's making fun of me. His accent is thick. I mean, thick. My name's Jesse. It's
we're like talking that. Like Larry the Cable Guy thick.
He's got that draw.
Larry the Cable. Yeah, he's got the draw more than anything. But I was like, this dude's making fun of me. It's like, I don't like this motherfucker. And then I saw him talking to an E6, and he was talking to the E6 the same way. We was both privates. And I was like, oh my God, that's how that guy really talks. But we ended up becoming friends. We were in formation. We were in force squad, standing in front of the LTs. And I was sitting there, and I was like, what the fuck is that smell? And I look over, I said, hey, did you fart? He said, yeah. He said, I got the beer shits. I was like, yeah, I can tell. we became friends by farting on each other, basically, and on the LTs.
That's the military right there.
Yeah. So, you know, this dude, he's just a great guy. I can't say enough good things about him.
Deployed together?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, He was the guy that me and him went everywhere together. Everybody knew if they saw him, they would find me, or if they found me, they'd see him too. We were always together.
Two Southern boys.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you get a nickname because you were both the Southern boys? Did you get like the Duke boys or Waylon and Willie or something like that?
No, nothing cool like fan. That. Yeah, it's all right. My whole unit's Southern, but. We got deployed with a bunch of
everybody probably has a Southern accent in your unit, huh?
Most of us. Our first deployment, we got deployed with a bunch of people from New York City, and
accents.
Yeah, no kidding. Our chief was from Long Island, and he almost sounded like he was from Boston, and. The thing we used to always say and joke about was he'd say, ah, fuck you, no way. And so we started saying that, just making fun of him. And then we said it to him one day. He said, what's that from? I was like, chief, man, that's from your life, dude. That's your everyday life. He thought it was from a movie.
That's funny.
But one of my favorite stories with Jesse was we were on this little base. And one of the things we were doing on this base was we were doing a new septic system, a new water distribution system for these guys. And it was a small compound. The whole compound was maybe 100 meters by 100 meters. This little tiny place.
Yes. Square football field.
Yeah, pretty much. We ended up running over a septic tank with a up-armored backhoe, and it broke the top of the septic tank. We didn't know it was there. It was just kind of under, like, a couple inches of dirt. But when we broke the lid, it dropped down in there, and we needed to pull it back out to put it back on top. So we hooked the chain around it.
Used full septic tank?
Full of shit.
It was completely... Yeah, it was full to the top.
Oh,
as full as that thing could get.
Please tell me someone got messy.
So, funny you ask. While Jesse was trying to hook a chain on one of the loops on top of the lid, he accidentally kicked a rock in, and when that rock went in, it splashed up and got into his mouth. And we had this guy that was with us that had the weakest stomach I've ever seen of anybody. And, you know, Jesse gets it in his mouth and he just pulls pulled his chew out and threw it on the ground and spit a couple of times and said, I'm going to go brush my teeth.
Yeah, I think.
And he walks off. And then here's this other dude with a weak stomach, and he's over there puking. And I'm like, dude, you're not even the one that got it in your mouth. You weren't even near it when it happened. But, yeah, so he ended up getting pretty damn sick from it. Had some intestinal issues.
Your buddy.
And, yeah.
Yeah, you
can imagine. Oof.
Getting a freaking milkshake of poo.
Dude.
Oh god, it was terrible. It was some of the worst smell I've ever smelled. I couldn't imagine the taste. But
man, you talk about weak stomach, but fuck, dude. I'm right there. I'm up there.
Yeah, you do have a little bit of a tight tummy. I don't know if you could have handled that.
Oh, I can tell you a couple
that
more.
That smell would have got you, Chuck.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. But so he ended up getting a bunch of intestinal issues from this. We were still on that same base. It was like a week later or so. I was in the bathroom taking a shit, and then I see my buddy D'Atley. That's Jesse. I saw his boots come walking in. And he sat down. And as soon as he sat down, I could hear the panic in the belt buckle trying to get it off. And as soon as he sat down, I heard that toilet seat, you know, the toilet seat when it smacks the bowl, when it comes off the bowl.
Slammed it down. He had to go.
Yeah, well, it was already down. And what it was the toilet seat shifted sideways off the bowl. And when he did that
little snap.
That little pop. Mm-hmm. When he did that, I heard a pfft. He said, oh, my Jesus. And I see him stand up. I see him stand up, and I see his pants are still around his ankles.
So you're seeing all of this basically from the middle of his calf down.
Yeah, yeah. I see him stand up with his pants still around his ankles, and he scooted all the way from the stall on my left to the stall on my right, and he said, you have got to look at that when you get done. And I went in there. I'm not kidding. There, from that one little fart, there was shit all over three of the walls in that stall. It was.
Oh, fuck.
I mean, all over the back of the toilet, all over the walls. And he said, dude, I feel so bad. Huh?
Yeah, he said he sprayed shit everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. He said, I feel so bad for that little Haji that's got to clean that up. it was the funniest thing,
man.
You know, that was the funniest thing to, you know, in my whole life.
And here's the thing. I mean, let's face it, even people out here that just have a good friend who's had a stomach problem that you can laugh at home, you know, you can imagine like laughing at your friend who's got, you know, Montezuma's revenge. No, imagine now you're out, you know, your battle buddy, you're deployed, you've shared the worst jokes, the worst stories, the worst moments, and now he shits himself so bad he does a Jackson Pollock all over the bathroom stall. I'm laughing as hard as I can for as long as I can. That shit is funny.
There's probably at least once every 6 months he'll call me and just be like, you have got to tell this story. And he'll put me on speakerphone. He'll just be with a bunch of buddies, you know, telling funny stories from Afghanistan. And, you know, he always has me tell that story because I'm sure from his perspective, it was funny, but from another person's perspective, watching his boots scurry to the stall on the other side of me, that was just, you know, that was golden.
That's my favorite part.
That's funny.
That's my favorite part. Well, now you don't have to tell. You just tell people that they can check out this episode, and you don't have to. Hold on here. You've told it for posterity's sake. Now he doesn't even need you. He could just be like, hold on, my buddy's going to tell you a story. Hold on.
Yeah, that is it's absolutely the best time. But yeah, another quick story. Same base, same thing. We're doing some digging with the backhoe, end up hitting a septic line, and we started hitting so many lines.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think this is a trend with you, hitting a septic line with a backhoe. I mean, when you're when you're in construction, it's kind of a you know, on the job hazard, but
yeah. So we end up hitting these things all the time over there. You know, here in America, you call Miss Utility, they come out and mark the ground. Over there, you just kind of dig and hope and pray. Hope and pray you don't hit a mine or a septic line. We were digging. We started hitting so many that we started making it to where if you hit it, you got to fix it. So the guy come out after he hit this line, and this is like a 6-inch sewage line. And he was cleaning the rocks out of it, and he was going up in there. He had gloves on, but he didn't have any like protective gloves. It didn't go up past his wrist. It was just like the standard army issued leather gloves.
Leather gloves. Like work gloves.
Yeah, just work gloves.
So
he's reaching up in there, leather and he's like,
poo-poo, by the way.
Yeah, it does. So he's going up in there like shoulder deep, getting rocks out of this line. And he come back out, and that guy that had the weak stomach saw him doing that and was already like kind of, about to puke. And then all of a sudden he goes, and he puked a little bit. He said, "You've got corn on your shoulder." And he started puking. That dude had like the perfect little kernel of corn on his shoulder.
Oh,
you all right over there, Chuck?
Yeah.
Chuck is both laughing and like retching at the same time.
Dude, I'm telling you. So I had a buddy. And great guy. We've worked together a few times, but most of the times he was training brand new guys, and because he's a training officer, and we got the opportunity to work together. And every time we got the opportunity, we took it. I swear to God, we were talking one day, and he's bringing up some nasty shit from my past and stuff like that. Full uniform, black and white police vehicle, is two guys in the car, and one of the officers is hanging out the fucking window, dry heaving, crying. And puking down the side of the cop car.
That's funny.
Wow.
That was fucking gross.
That was gross. I bet it was.
And we were stopped at a red light, dude. He's dying. He's crying laughing. And he's driving, and I'm just in the passenger seat, just like out the window.
Did you have
to
notify the watch commander or anything? Gee.
No. Everyone's just staring like, is this real life?
You just run through a car wash real quick?
Yeah, right.
And I just left it.
Hey, let the trustees, let the freaking probationers clean it up.
Fuck it.
You were talking about Hodges. You have guys on probation that have to go to the station and wash cars. That's what you use.
That's funny.
Or when you for us, when you drop somebody off at jail, if they shit, pissed, or bled in your back seat, you just have the inmates that were on a work detail. You'd be like, "Hey, I need a work detail." And while you're booking your prisoner, these inmates that were earning privileges would come out and mop and shine and clean your back seat so they could get the shit, piss, and puke and blood.
Sounds like out. The army thing. Hey, I need 5 volunteers. You don't fucking raise your hand for that. Yeah, shit. Right.
You 5. You're volunteering. Detail. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Mac, I appreciate you coming on. As we're closing out here, we always give our listener or our guest, I should say, in this case, you are a listener and a guest, a chance to dedicate their episode to someone. I suspect you do have somebody you'd like to dedicate the episode to, though.
Yeah, I do. I'd like to dedicate it to a few people, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Specialist Nathaniel Selby. He was a good buddy of mine. He got killed just a couple weeks before we left for the deployment in 2013. And then, of course, Sergeant Mac, Specialist King. He took his own life in September 2020. And then Sergeant Tanner Price, he ended up losing his life while having heart surgery, passed away during surgery.
Well, rest easy, brothers. We got it from here. We appreciate you coming on, Mac, and paying tribute to them, because we don't hear about people just don't hear about this stuff. You carry, I carry names with me. You carry names with you. Chuck carries names with him. And if we don't get encouraged to speak these names out loud and pay tribute to them, then nobody else is going to do it. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely.
The news media sure as hell ain't going to do it.
I don't care.
Nope. Yep.
Do you mind if I say one more thing?
No, absolutely. I was going to say that, as we close out, you can say whatever you like.
I just want people to know that are listening. If you're in that dark place, if you feel like there's nothing left in life for you, that's not true. There are people out there that love you and want you. Just don't be blinded by the dark. Just stick it out. And if you're in a good place in life, call a battle buddy. They mm-hmm. might need it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Don't choose a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And believe me, no matter how bad you think it is, it will pass. It will get
absolutely.
Better. It will. It might get a little worse before it gets better, and you may feel like you can't handle that. And I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, the feeling of I would do anything just to make it stop, right? That's a big deal, is just make it stop, because they just don't want to feel it anymore. But it will go away and it will get better. And the interesting thing I've heard about it is you take your pain and you just transfer it on to the ones that you love. That's all you mm-hmm. do with it. It doesn't go away. It does not go away. You're just basically saying, I don't want this anymore, so I'm going to give it to everybody I care about.
So, yep.
Anyway.
And I've said it before. We've all said it before. If you know someone that you or you think someone may be struggling, just call them up and be like, hey, you good?
Yeah.
Everything okay? How you doing? And just spark up a conversation. You never know. It might save someone's life.
Two words. You good? That's it.
Yeah.
Yep. That's it.
All right. Well, again, Mac, I appreciate you being here. Chuck, how can people reach us to either, they can go to the website. The website's being redone. Chuck is in the process of redoing it. Chuck's got a lot of things on his plate with his wife's new business. And also, like, he may be home from work and not able to go crush crime and suppress evil, but he's busier now than he ever was with the podcast. And
yeah,
so
pretty busy. You got a screaming kid too. That just makes it so difficult to do things. But yeah, so if you want to reach out to us and you want to be on the show, right now we're probably booked all the way through July and probably into August, but
of 2021, because I don't know when people are listening to this.
Yeah, of 2021. So if you want to come on the show, you want to shoot the shit, you can follow us on our Instagram page. You can reach out there, direct message, and then I will give you the email if you can't remember it from here. But it's booking.warstories@gmail.com, and that's where you go to book an episode. You know, we'll talk. You know, I'll probably give you a call. I contacted Mac over the phone because sometimes it gets easier than constantly going back through an email. So, you know, shoot me your landline, shoot me your cell phone. Again, that's booking.warstories@gmail.com, or go to the Instagram, which is, you know, War Stories Official on Instagram, and you can direct message there. We will get it, and we will put you in contact with us, and it's that easy.
I've got something kind of cool that I'm about to do this weekend, I think, Chuck, and you don't even know about this because I just found out finally today, got confirmation. Tomorrow, I will be picking up a 6-hour P320 RXPX compact. I think I got all the letters right.
Oof, it's a mouthful.
It's the SIG P320 compact with the Romeo Zero RMR on it, and it's supposed to be a really good concealed carry gun. I will be taking it to the range this weekend, cranking some rounds down range, and telling you guys what I think. So watch for a YouTube social media video on our YouTube page, and we're going to start posting some of those. We're going to have Chuck and Matt are going to get together and try these snacks that were sent on the locker room from down under. Chuck's got some potential holster reviews coming up for gear.
Yep.
And like our commercial at the beginning says, check out Acre Leather. They gave you that discount promo code. I'm giving them a little extra plug because I know those guys over there, and seriously good people, seriously good gear. If you wear leather gear, can't do worse than that, or you can't do better than that. They're you know, it was the stuff I still, like, I bought one belt and one set of leather gear from Acre, and it never wore out. I still have it. That's almost 20 years old. So really good stuff. And other than that, I have nothing, Chuck. How about you?
Yeah, I got something. I talked to Mac about it. I was on Facebook and then I think Instagram, and I came across this company and it's like Hero something. I don't remember the exact name of the company, but I will have the exact name of the company here by today or tomorrow. I ordered a bunch of paracord bracelets and some keychains from them. They're like $20 a piece. But what they do is they give back to veterans who are struggling and they need service dogs and stuff like that, struggling with PTSD and things like that. And they work with a nonprofit that that donates the money. You know, they donate the sales from the goods that they sell, the paracord bracelets and stuff like that, to give affordable service dogs to veterans. So there'll be a giveaway with that coming up shortly.
Great. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I thank you. And again, Mac, thanks for coming on. And until our next episode.
Thank you for having me.
Come home with your shield or on it.